Welcome. Welcome to Recipe for Peace Now. I'm your host, Sue Beller, and this is the show where we find practical, real-life solutions to difficulties bringing people together for a common goal, a common good. We will discuss listener emails, answer common questions, and at the end of the show, we will have two delicious potluck recipes made for sharing with your new community of, well, if not exactly friends, at least willing participants. If you would like to send in a question or a favorite recipe, please email us at recipeforpeacenow@gmail.com or visit our website, www.recipeforpeacenow.com. Also, if you would like to hear prior shows, they're archived on that website, recipeforpeacenow.com. Thanks. Now let's get started. This time we're going to be talking about apathy. And we don't like to admit it, but it happens. Sometimes you just get kind of, well, discouraged, right? And you get kind of apathy and you say, oh, gee, not this again, that kind of stuff. So let's talk about it. Let's figure out how to prevent it and what to do if it happens, because sometimes it does. So let's talk about us first, the leaders. So what kind of leadership apathy? Oh, some of you are already answering the questions. Yay! What kind of leadership apathy do we encounter or even experience, right? What kind of problems do we have with that? Sorry, you know that I suddenly get fascinated by the little windows that pop up on the radio computer. It's like, yay! Uh-huh. So what happens? What kind of apathy do we have? Well, yes, I think the first one we're going to talk about is burnout. And that is a wee bit of an Americanism, but it means that we're kind of tired. Not today, because we didn't get enough sleep, but kind of didn't do it in a long time. Kind of getting, oh, not again, and having trouble mustering our model of enthusiasm. Because remember, as leaders, we are models of enthusiasm. If we aren't enthusiastic, if we don't look like we think it's going to work, if we don't really buck it up, well, how will our participants have confidence? How will they feel that they're going to succeed if it looks like the leader doesn't think they're going to? Well, that would be bad. So burnout, too many times, too many similar, right? The next one we're going to talk about is also true, and it leads to burnout, is the constant civility rule enforcement. Sometimes you've got a group, you keep having to repeat the civility rules. You keep having to threaten them. It's kind of like, gee, really? Yes. And it may give you some apathy. Mm-hmm. I think the next one we're going to call dislikes. People are talking about the fact that you're not really feeling like a third-party impartial because you really don't like some of the people in the room. You really don't like them. Or maybe, well, that would be apathy. Enthusiasm, I suppose, would be if you really liked them. But either way, it leads towards not so good. So we got to worry about that. Mm-hmm. What are the kind of leadership apathy do we encounter or experience? I'm going to call this that the process is dragging. The process is taking too long. It should only take, I don't know, a certain amount of time. And somehow it's just dragging on. And it doesn't seem to be reaching a conclusion. Mm-hmm. And it is sometimes because, which we're going to talk about too, sometimes people are fighting over minutia. And then you've always got that person who won't let go, right? They came with an idea. They came with an agenda. We've already sincerely discussed it. We've already sincerely done it. But they keep circling around. They won't let go. And we're going to talk about what to do about that, too. That's kind of like fighting over minutia. It's bogging us down. We need to get past it. Mm-hmm. What other kinds of apathy are there? Well, how about participant apathy? We're not the only ones, the leaders, that kind of get, oh, geez, not again, type. Well, that we have, yes, that is burnout. My participants sometimes feel that way. Yes, I think this is true. So I'm going to put it as number one. Participants get apathy, and so do we. When there's too many meetings, I don't think you should hold a meeting just because it's the third Thursday. I think you should hold an actual meeting that takes people's time and effort and you have to prepare for when you've got something to say, when there's really a need for a meeting, and not just because we meet. I do corporate a lot, and I've had corporate cultures that I've had to explain that's not going to apply to us, where they meet like every week, after work, on a weeknight, when people need to get home. And all right, we're fabulous, and maybe you've got something to say every week because we're chugging right along and the process is going forward and we're getting this done in 4 weeks. My experience has been that the every week is just corporate policy. It's culture. And oftentimes, there's not that much to say every week. We're getting it done. We're chugging right along, but it's going to take a little more than 4 weeks, right? Yeah. A very close second to that is too many reports, right? Yeah, too much busy work. Keep having to write it down and report something, right? And then you have to confer with your colleagues. What did you say? And like that, too much busy work. We're getting there. The leader will report in at a reasonable interval, as in when there's something to report, right? Another reason that participants get apathy, and so do leaders, but we are not the kind of leader that has this, right? I've seen groups that I have not led that kind of wander off and don't get anywhere. You've seen these, and sometimes I'm brought in to fix them is how I see them, where they never quite defined success. They didn't know what they wanted, so they couldn't work towards it, or success kept changing. See that too, right? It kept changing. It was, yeah, we have this is what we want. Oh no, not something. Not more than being just flexible, because you have to be flexible in your definition of success. It changed and whipped people around, and then you had it halfway there, and then that wasn't it no more. And it's like, really? No, I don't think so. Another reason for participant apathy, which folks are talking about, and of course this is not a scripted show, so it goes where we take it. Hello, everybody. Thank you for all your participation. Another reason for participant apathy, and maybe leader apathy too, if you haven't done it right, but of course you're going to, is that the group is plain ordinary too large. And if you've got too big a group, it gets unwieldy, A, to keep track of everybody and what they're doing. But worse than that, you've got folks that can hide. They don't really want to participate. They don't want to put the time in and like that. And they kind of hide behind the group. And they don't participate much. And it's kind of like, oh, yeah, I'm a member of that group, I think. But I haven't gone forever because nobody cares, right? I care. I'm the leader. If I see a group that's too big or too diverse, you have to decide what that means. It could mean that the plain ordinary employer, and remember in this show we call the employer whoever it was that had the brains to bring us in, right? It's not a specific term that denotes actual employment. Whoever brought us in is the employer, whoever was smart enough to hire us, even if we're not getting paid, because sometimes if you're first out in the field, Even I volunteer sometimes if it's close to my heart. And I want, or it's something that I'd like to know about and I'd like to participate in because it's important, but I don't have the expertise and I'd like to gain some, right? So sometimes you volunteer. Whoever it is that brought you in, whoever it is that said, come and help us, that's your employer in this show, in our context. I don't care what the actual relationship is. So sometimes the employer has demands to both leader and participant apathy because they're a pain, right? And we're going to get to this word, and it's going to resonate. I'm not sure if it's an Americanism or not, but there's a word called, that it's a kind of a usage word called micromanagement, where somebody really keeps being too detailed, right? Keeps nagging, keeps wanting to have reports. I just tell them to sit in, right? Yeah, and be quiet. And I explain that micromanagement is not a style that's going to work in this specific case. I plan on to come out and say it. And I invite them to actually participate under my leadership. I ain't scared. We're doing a good job. We don't need to be micromanaged. You don't need to do every single little detail. In fact, as leader, you don't want to micromanage. And you want to have an assistant to handle the nitty-gritty, where are we going to meet, what time, what kind of food is going to be there. And has everybody seen whatever kind of written materials that have been passed around, not necessarily physically written nowadays, but like emails and stuff, PDFs, that needs to be passed around and read ahead of time. So that people don't get a surprise. You know, that's one of my things. Yes, people are going, yeah, we know about this. One of the things that you should always do is if there's going to be something that we're going to discuss and it's written down in some way, it's going to be a graphic, I don't know, whatever it is, you need to disseminate it ahead of time and not surprise people, because they will spend the entire meeting with their head down trying to think about the material you've just handed out because they didn't have a chance to read it. They didn't have a chance to look at it. You need to give them a chance to do both. Everybody needs to come prepared. And the way to come prepared is to be given the stuff that's supposed to be prepared, right? Right, yeah. That's an assistant's job, if you've got one. And if not, you must be very efficient. Mm-hmm. We'll talk about interns. Oh, I suppose we should do it now, because we've just talked about assistants. Yes and no. People are asking about interns, whether you can just get an intern. Interns are, in the United States at least, and I think this is true everywhere, but you could call them something different. But they are, generally speaking, the people who come to you that don't cost your organization money. You grade them, you give them time to do stuff, and they come, and what they get paid with is college credit. They get paid with credit and experience so that when they go out in the world, they can put on their resume that they worked for Recipe for Peace Now or whoever you are, right? Right. It's a wonderful system. It's fabulous. It really is. We require, because we can, but I think you should too, you should be fussy about your interns. I know they're free help, but sometimes free help can be worse than no help at all. Does that make sense? Yeah. Sometimes, because they need to be trained. They need to be watched. They need to be assisted so that they understand what it is that they're supposed to do because they represent you, right? Yeah. These are all big ideas, big things. We require that they be adults. They have to be in a master's program, which means they already have a college degree, usually in some sort of business area, right? Sometimes in international studies, sometimes in more of a there's a lot of specific, really specific degrees in the United States. I'm going to call it more of a social studies type area where they're going to go out and do good in the world in some way. We won't discuss exactly what the title of those degrees are, but there's like a lot of them. We require that you be already in an MBA program with one of those type of degrees because it means that you're really interested and you're really an adult. You've gone through a lot of schooling. You've done a lot of work. You've been focused, right? Yeah. Then we ask that you stay for a year with us as our intern. Now, if we really hate each other, you can get out of it. But we kind of require that because that's several terms worth, depending on whether you're on quarters or on terms or whatever it is you're doing, how your school works. But the first month or so, you are the intern is a student. They're learning things. They're not much help. By the second month, they pretty much know what they're doing, but they still need to be supervised. You see what I'm telling you? By the end, they're really autonomous. They can really work on their own, and they really understand what to do, and they can make decisions and not have to ask everything. They can be trusted. And, yes, and a lot of times they do indeed, it's a truth. We do get our interns kind of by recommendation, which makes them a little better too, a little more efficient, a little more able. We hardly ever get someone who doesn't fit, who really doesn't like us and we don't like them, and, this is not working out type stuff. We hardly ever have that because our present interns train our brand new interns after some months, right? And therefore, they tend to help us select who it is that's going to be the intern. We're kind of desirable because we know when we've got somebody good, and we have pizza Fridays. We don't micromanage because you're supposed to not need it, especially after a little while, right? Yeah. And so, it is true sometimes we get an ugly surprise. But not in a while, not since we've had people that come recommended to us. They are students with our intern student is how they know them, really, mostly. And they know that they're really adept, right? Yeah. You don't want somebody who isn't. And this leads me to the thought that you should really, if you can possibly afford it, and I know sometimes funding is tight, you should have a professional assistant, somebody who gets paid real money and is really good and keeps all the balls in the air and all the processes running. Because as you get more experience, you'll get more business. You'll get a reputation. You'll get busier. And you won't be able to keep everything. You won't be able to do all the details. Interns may not be capable. And you need someone who is an overseer, right? Right. Yes. And they deal with clients, too, and things. And really someone who is really good, really well paid, really, really on the ball and can keep the process going. Yes. Mm-hmm. So that's the difference between interns and volunteers. I like to use with caution. Sometimes if we have a specific project and it has specific interest in the public, we get a group that volunteers to help on a specific project. That's fine. Because you've got somebody else in charge of the group, and they're already a group, and they already know each other, right? Yeah. A group that is usually because of social good type ideas, interested in the outcome, and wants to assist, right? Yeah. Yeah, it can be even a fairly big group like Rotary or something that comes by for a project. Right? Yeah. Mm-hmm. What else makes participant apathy? Well, when they're forced to participate, right? Because they didn't choose it. There was a certain level, and they got forced. Let's do outsider apathy also. I don't know if we're running out of time. Outsider apathy is really the idea that whatever it is, it affects somebody else. It affects them, but not us. Whatever it is affects them, but not us. We're not in trouble. We don't care, right? And then they get interested when it kind of affects us. Pardon me. Outsider apathy, sometimes, well, you know, the public is kind of has a short attention span, and I must say so does the media. You have to keep it in front of them constantly, or else they wander off to the next important and interesting issue that's new and everybody's talking about. So if you want to keep things going and you want to maintain interest and not get apathy and not be yesterday's news, you have to be doing something. You have to be today's news, right? This is true, too. Yeah, people are saying that one of the reasons that the media and the public and like that get apathy is that it seems too big, too much, too impossible, right? Yeah, that happens. Sometimes everybody gets apathy like that. When you get into it, it seems like, oh, my God. This is really a lot of work, a lot of whatever, right? Yeah. If you'll excuse me, I take a sip of water. Hang on. Oh, pardon me. Yeah. So let's talk more in detail about these things. We got a little sidetracked as we were listing them, right? Mm-hmm. Yeah. So let's talk about leaders. Let's talk about us first. We talked about burnout a little bit. And what happens if you kind of got burnout? What should you do about it? It's not the fault of your participants. It's not the fault of your employer. Remember, it's a generic term. It's not the fault of anybody. It's kind of... You're just getting kind of worn down. It's too many of the same thing over and over, right? What should we do about that? Yeah, it's a good point. Muhammad and others are saying you could just put in order to take a break. Go on a little vacation, take a break. Go, I don't know, follow some sort of an idea that you've got that has absolutely nothing to do with negotiation and other people. Yeah. Sometimes I sit down and I read a book, not a book that is of any use, just a mystery, just a book, just a novel, something that do me absolutely no good. I actually sit down and I read it just to relax. I put my feet up. I have some popcorn in a big bowl, which I eat all by myself, and I read a book, just a trash book. And then I feel recharged. I know that seems kind of basic, but do something easy. Because you can't just up and I suppose you could, but it's really not going to do your reputation a lot of good if you want to stay in business. You can't just up and quit, right? Say, oh, I've had it. This is my 940th one of these, and you are the straw that breaks the camel's back. I'm leaving. Well, I suppose you can recuse yourself. You can do that if you absolutely must. And it may have more to do with the personal dislikes than burnout exactly, because we're going to talk about what happens if you dislike somebody of the participants, or you dislike the employer, which is somewhat possible too. You ruin your reputation. I mean, you could do it, but you'll ruin your reputation. So let's try to do something else than that, right? Yes, this is true, too. Lee and others are saying that the best thing to do is to use your skills and volunteer outside your comfort zone. Volunteer for something that you're just interested in. Volunteer for something that you don't even know if you're interested in. Volunteer for something that's really easy, like going down and packing food for people that need food, like Northwest Harvest. I don't know, other places must have some that thing like that too. I go and do it. You just go and do it. It doesn't have paperwork. You know what I mean? You stand there and you put so many apples into a bag, and then you take another one and another one, and you do a whole bunch of them, so that when people go to the free food banks, they can get a bag of apples, right? And it's faster. And they don't have to pick the apples and decide how many apples they want. It's 4 apples here. And, right? Yeah. I kind of sorted through and stuff. So, but it's, and then it's also kind of easy social, kind of easy networking, because you talk, you chat with the other people doing it. It's not silent. We don't have to count. I mean, we can all see 4. It's not something that takes any kind of brain power. They just need it done because they need extra hands to get everything put together so that it can be given out. Right? Right, yeah. And so you're fulfilling a good thing. You're fulfilling a good purpose. But it's don't have to think about it too much. And you get to chat with new people. And then a lot of times the place that asked you to come and do it, because you're part of an organization probably, they serve, I don't know, coffee and a snack. And so you get to sit down and have coffee and a snack. And like that. So something that's easy. Yeah. And fulfilling. Something that does somebody some good. That seems like a good thing, right? Right. I do it all the time. You can also volunteer as a negotiator, right? Outside your comfort zone. To help. Not to lead. Because you're not qualified to lead. If you were qualified to lead, it wouldn't be outside your comfort zone. Right? Yeah. You might want to become a participant to help out. But also to see somebody else do it. I find that fascinating. There are lots of people in this area who I think are really good, in addition to me, but really good. And I like to see them at work, right? And I'm especially interested in technology because I don't know anything. Well, I do know stuff now, but it changes rapidly. And I'm fascinated to go to all kinds of conventions and show it and stuff like that and seminars to learn about new technology because I don't know what's out there, so I don't know that I would like it. I don't know to ask for it, right? Yeah, things change. And how to do business changes. It's fascinating. Mm-hmm. Yeah, you can go meditate or take a break as a group. Yeah, you might even take your whole group with you. If you're getting kind of burnout and they're getting kind of burnout, let's do something different. Let's go on a field trip, right? Even if it's to lunch or dinner. Let's go to an unusual restaurant to us. Maybe one with some performer, right? Yeah. Let's take a break. Let's just hang out, right? Yeah. We could even bring in somebody. Like a meditation expert, right? Yeah, if everybody agrees that they'd like to try it. I've done that. I've brought in experts that really have nothing to do with the topic, but have everything to do with our brains and our well-being and our ability to kind of think in different ways, right? Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I have. I've brought maybe. People are talking about all kinds of different experts that you can bring in. I usually do someone who is, I don't know how to say this better. I didn't think about this, but it's really true, kind of a performer. Somebody who does music, for example, or sings, or leads meditation. Someone who plays an instrument. I don't usually do things that require physical adeptness of my participants or are religious in some way, unless everybody's the same religion and they agree, they want to. Yeah, this the reason I don't do yoga. I think I don't do yoga because I don't want to do yoga, is what it really is. But it leads me to understand that I don't want people to be embarrassed. I want to do something that for sure everybody can do, participate in if they so desire. Eat, listen, watch, think, close your eyes. It's something that under no circumstances can anybody be unable to do it. That's my rule. I don't want something that requires physical adeptness or other people in the room are particularly experienced and therefore you've got the fancy doers and the people that have never done it before and they're kind of like, oh my God, I feel like an idiot. How do they stand on one leg like that? No, we will not be standing on one leg or sitting crosswise on the floor. We will not. The next thing we get is burnout is we have to enforce the civility rules too much. Remember, you need to announce the civility rules and you need to enforce them immediately, consistently, and fairly. Announce and then immediately, consistently, and fairly. Yeah, and sometimes you have to do it about 4,963 times. Remember, you're the leader. What are we? Yes, thank you. Lots of people know this. We are models of the civility rules. You cannot lose your temper. You cannot lose your cool. You cannot mention that this is getting tiresome, right? However, in order to enforce the civility rules, and I do this before I set foot with this group, before I start any kind of leadership, before anything, before you can enforce the rules, you need to get some power to do so. Usually from the employer. I like it in writing, right? Because otherwise they're just words. Now, play nice. No! Now, play nice or fill in the blank, something that really gets their attention. Or you'll be expelled from this group and be demoted. Well, that's a get your attention, right? If everybody in the group is a certain level. And in order to be in the group, you must be that level. So you can get demoted for lack of cooperation, right? Yeah. Or worse, bullying. Over participation in a negative manner, right? Right. I like to have the ability to call in the employer to witness this, to listen, to come, to enforce, to give their gravitas, their enforcement to this group, right? So that you can see that they really mean it and it's not just lip service. Oh, it don't mean nothing's going to happen. No. Something's going to happen, right? Yes. Yeah, the employer, people asking about the penalty for noncompliance with the group. I suppose you as leader are the person that reports that, right? And so you have to decide how much, how deep, how egregious, right? And then you need to know what the penalty is for this type of action. Because I don't go to the employer first. I like to try to deal with the participant on the ground level, on my level. I like to see if I can reason with him or her. I like to explain to them what I'm going to do if they don't stop doing that, disrupting the group, right? What the penalty is going to be. I like to make it very, very, oh, very clear, right? Right. That it's going to be big. That there's a penalty for being obstructive. Sometimes people are asking how you get people that are that impossible. Okay, my specialty, if I have one, is that I'm brought in after a group has failed. and they cannot fail because they must get whatever it is accomplished. But they've tried to reach consensus. They've tried to negotiate. They've given it their best shot. And they just didn't make it. So they have to do what I actually refer to when we first meet as get a new sheriff, new leader, new person. And then we're going to oftentimes work backwards. How is it that we are, how are we going to work this, right? Sometimes in a group like that that has failed already, not only is there a preconception that we're going to talk about in a minute, but it creates a problem because the prior leader is still in the group, now as a participant. And he or she would like you to fail. It's human nature. They want to say, well, Mai didn't make it, but even Sue could not get consensus, could not reach the successful outcome. And you have to explain that to them very carefully. It's not going to fly. Because we're going to enforce the civility rule, and they create a convivial atmosphere of respect. Convivial atmosphere of respect. Let's go on to personal dislikes. You really can't stand somebody in the group. Maybe it's the employer. You can't stand somebody, though. And you're an impartial third party. And what's worse, you have to model civility. You're required to model civility as the leader. Well, and you really get on your nerves. You have to buck it up. You have to take 3 deep breaths and not show it. Yes, this is a good point, too. Muhammad says that you need to think about the source and whether it's a learned versus experience. Think about maybe your own bias. Do we have some? We're human. Possibly we do. Your own bias. Your own ideas about how things should be, right? Think about those consciously so that you know that you can do something about it and be a model of civility. I'm taking a sip of water. Hang on. Let's think about the bias of our participants, the other people in the room. And maybe the employer too, right? How come we've got this dislike? Is it warranted? Is it personal? Is it from experience or is it from learning? Because everybody knows that this is true, which of course not everybody knows and is never true, right? Let's think about the source. Yes, thank you. We're going to have to gain some empathy, right? Because otherwise, we're just going to fail, and the darn thing's going to come apart like it did before. Let's get some empathy, and let's ask because empathy, my friends, is understanding, not necessarily agreement. Empathy is understanding, not necessarily agreement. And this empathy is very important because it's going to tell us what we need to know about how come we don't seem to be getting along, right? And how come I've got a preconception that I didn't even realize that I had? If we're going to have empathy, we're going to ask the 5W questions. They are who, what, where, when, and why. Who, what, where, when, and why. These questions will get us down to how come we've got these likes and dislikes in this room. Who, what, where, when, and why. Are they all asked at the same time? Not necessarily. Are they asked by the leader? Usually, but not necessarily. Right? It's all a judgment call. Right? Right. What else leads to apathy besides lack of understanding, lack of empathy? Right? Sometimes the process is too long. It really is. The process is just too long. It's taking too long. Sometimes there are established protocols in an organization, and they're perfectly good in some circumstances. They're not real good in this one. It's not working out. They're too rigid, right? And you don't have too little control. It's making the process last forever, right? Right. No. What we're going to try, and we're going to talk about participant apathy in a minute, and those protocols usually lead to many things that cause apathy, one of them being too many meetings, and two of them being too much paperwork, too unwieldy, taking too much of my time. After work, I don't get paid for that. I'm willing, but gee, right? Yeah. And the process can't take forever. I know that you've estimated longer than you thought it would take because that's wise, but let's cut down on the insider fighting, which has taken too much time. The people that are unable to let go of an idea that's already been discussed. You take them aside and you explain this to them. And then if it continues, well, they're out. If they can't be out because they're a certain level and it can't be done, because they're really high level sometimes, let's extend some peer pressure also, right? Yeah. Because they're arguing for a certain point, for a certain agenda. And that agenda's been discussed, right? Yes. Yes, you need to define success, because that's what we're all looking for, right? Right. And define it. Then you don't understand the underlying purpose of whatever it is you're doing. You don't understand the underlying purpose, you're not going to want to do it anymore. It's going to give you a nasty case of apathy, right? So success needs to be defined by whom, right? That's what has to be determined. Might be the employer, might be us, might be the leader. I don't like to because I like people to come to their own conclusions. Sometimes circumstances define success. Sometimes it changes become of circumstances. Some things become legal or illegal, for example. Or funding has either increased or decreased. Something outside of our control. Participants hate busy work, too. They hate being micromanaged. They hate being stared at. You notice that? Yeah, no. We're not going to just stare at them open-mouthed. You ever have that? People just, well, that's peer pressure, too, in case they keep bringing the same stuff up. Participants, this is a good point, too. Participants lose respect for the leader kind of fast. I've seen this happen where people decide that it's not going to get anywhere. And because they haven't been informed of the process, they haven't been informed how it's going to work and why, right? And that's important because if you don't really think it's going to work, you're going to get apathy. You're not going to want to do it no more. We talked about busy work, right? Too many reports, too many forced bonding. You ever have that? Somebody just forces you to go bonding with your fellow participants. Ah, jeez. At the beginning of this show, I say that you don't have to be friends, just willing participants. I tell people, and this is always a revelation, I tell people that the faster we reach our successful outcome, the faster we get it done, the faster we don't have to deal with each other anymore. We're done. Yay, team, right? Yes. We also talked about the group being too large at the beginning of the show, and we talked about participant apathy. It's possible to have that because people are able to hide and you get uneven participation, right? Yeah, which makes the people who are doing all the work resentful and the people who are hiding feel kind of like they don't ever have to do anything because it's working for them, right? Right. Mm-hmm. So what you need to do, yeah, people asking what to do about it. I'm getting a lot of questions about how large is too large. I'm going to say it depends on the situation. Sometimes I have a very big group, 50 people. I mean, huge. That's a lot. A lot of people needing to do something. But they are very one-minded. They are focused. They're all of the same opinion. They just need help getting the process done so they can reach their well-defined successful outcome, right? I see this corporate sometimes. There's something that needs to be done, and little personalities come into play, of course. But it's a big group because there's strength in numbers. Yes. Sometimes the people seem diverse, but the goal is so well-defined and so narrow that they're all marching towards it, that they're all focused, right? Yes. One of the best examples is in the United States. Do we have enough time? Oh, we're going to run out of time for the recipes, and I apologize. In the United States, marijuana is illegal. Federally illegal. Federal law is above state, local, whatever else kind of law. It's the most important. For years, different groups by themselves, and when they talk to each other too, but they all wanted their own little power play. They approached the federal government, the people of the federal government, of course, the right folk, and they tried to get the law changed for marijuana, especially for medical marijuana. Groups that had constituents who were ill in some way, and marijuana would relieve the symptoms in a non-opiate manner. There's a big, big thing in this country, in the United States, that there's opioid addiction because people take a lot of painkillers. And this would be an adjunct. It would be an alternative. So it was tried. It wasn't making it. We had a very liberal administration, the one before this. If you couldn't get it done on their time, you weren't getting it done. So a very unusual idea occurred. In some of the more, you know, we have states, right? We have states have laws. And in the, especially amongst people who lived in some more liberal states, because it's a big country, and some states are less liberal than others. And in these more liberal states, the idea was floated to put legalization on the state ballot. This is really, really weird. It's never been done. Because if the voters legalize it, it's still miserably illegal because it's federally illegal, right? Right. But the reason to do it would be, A, to allow people to buy marijuana, but B, to create an oversight system that other states could look at and go, oh, Washington did it. That seems all right. We could copy their model. And then the idea being that if a lot of states did it, because, oh, it's mighty fine for the state, because there's a lot of taxes. Yay, team. It brings money into the state coffers. Politicians love that. In the more liberal states, the voters would like it. Politicians get voted in by voters, right? Right. You see, it makes kind of a circle. And so it was done, but what I'm telling you is there was a large group of people interested in having legalization. They were diverse. They were people who were representing people with bad illnesses that were in pain. There were people who were representing people who are aging because you get pressure in your eyes and stuff like that, glaucoma and things. There were people who thought it was a good social idea. There were people who wanted to take marijuana. There were growers. There were sellers. There were people who wanted to rent businesses to people and sell equipment. And there were lots of people who wanted brand new spanking fabulous jobs regulating the marijuana industry and getting some benefit from all that. Did I mention the taxes? Yes. In the United States, it's not an official term, but we call that a sin tax, S-I-N, something that's kind of a luxury like cigarettes and liquor and marijuana and stuff have really high taxes above and beyond sales tax, which everybody has. But so this was a lot of folk. But you see how razor sharp that is, how focused? Success was narrowly defined. You didn't have to divide them up. They all wanted the same darn thing, and they understood exactly what it was. And there were rules about how to get on the ballot that had to be obeyed in order to get it on the ballot. And there were politicians that had to be dealt with for the regulatory type stuff and like that. So it was everybody was focused. There was a big group that was didn't have to be divided up. Some groups are so large that they need to be made into teams, right? So that we can handle it better as leader. So that the participants know who to talk to and what they're supposed to be doing. Because each team has a leader, right, who reports into the main leader, right? Yeah. It cuts down on the amount of voices. It cuts down the amount of work. More efficient because each team has a focus, an idea that they are investigating, and then reporting back to the whole. So it's important. Each team has their own area of expertise, right? Yeah. Mm-hmm. Also, if you've got groups that have know each other, it will also break up cliques, which are bad things because they're exclusionary, right? People that only want to talk to each other because they know each other and they basically agree. Well, let's kind of divide that up and not be exclusionary because we all want to hear what it is that you've got to say. We all want to know, right? Yeah, very important. Mm-hmm. We talked about apathy because of prior failure, right? If a group has already failed, or maybe they have seen others fail, usually they failed, not under us, of course. Excuse me. Yeah, frog in my throat. If a group has already failed and there's still a group and you've been brought in to lead, they've got kind of a preconception of impossible. They do. They've got an idea that it didn't work before. What makes you think it's going to work this time? And the answer is because we're going to think out of the box this time and do something different. But they have to understand that. The key, yes, thank you. Yes, thank you. A lot of people, Suki and others, are talking about the fact that you need to see value in your work. Everybody does. You need to see that your work is really getting somewhere, that it's going to have value, that it's going to really, really reach a successful outcome and not just be toiling without any benefit, right? Yeah, especially on your own time because people figure, well, I'm getting paid and there's snacks and so they come. But no, we want to get somewhere. It's not just to pretend that we're trying. We want to really succeed, right? Right, yeah. So you need to see value. Mm-hmm. Yeah, sometimes people are forced to participate. I see this a lot. They're forced to participate in the group because they are, for example, a certain employment level. And they're all supposed to have input because it impacts their work life. It impacts their daily life. Sometimes it's not even an employment level. It's a type of person. Does that make sense? Like religious leaders who are talking about some sort of a social issue that they need to get together on, right? And they need to agree, and they need to have an idea of what to do about this so that we don't get unexpected outcomes, right? Unintended consequences. Very important, you know my view about experts and the fact that you really need them, because you need to not have unintended consequences. You need to be able to understand, if we do this, what will be the impact, right? Now, I suppose no one can foretell the future, but someone knows the impact, at least their idea of the impact, and who will be impacted, and how greatly, is another one of the questions that we're going to want to know. So you need, sometimes people are forced to participate, and they come in with apathy. Oh, my God, I got to do this. And then they roll their eyes at each other. And then everybody feels kind of like, oh, my God, another set of meetings. We're going to get rid of that apathy by showing value, by showing if we do this properly, there will be a real life outcome, a real outcome that we can track that will enhance our existence, maybe our work existence, maybe our individual existence. You know, if you learn good negotiation skills and you learn consensus building and you get a good teacher, which would be us, you get to model the leader, that's something that you take with for life. It's not just something that you sit in this little room and you do. No, you learn how to deal with people. And what could be a more useful thing than that, right? Yeah. Also, it enhances your reputation to be in our group. Wow, they really did it. Wow, you guys rock, right? Yeah, enhance your reputation. You're going to put it on your resume for the next employment that you'd like to see. You can put it on your resume and have enhanced reputation to work your way up in this company, if there is such a thing, right? Yeah, to keep your job, to get better, to get a raise, to get something good, right? Yes. Thank you. Yes, to go off and be leader also, because you've had a good role model, and you can replicate. Yes, that is my goal, that everybody of my participants replicates how to do it, right? Yes, and then your peers, remember the other people that think about you and like that, and you worry about what they think in your employer? They all think, oh, you were a member of that group. You really got things done and in record time. Hey, nothing wrong with that as a statement, right? Right. Yes. Important. Important to know. Important to think about. My friends, something else that is important is keeping time. I'm afraid we're not going to get to the recipes this time, but we had such a delightful conversation. Thank you for joining us. Thank you for all of your participation. If you want to find us, we're at recipeforpeacenow@gmail.com. The website, www.recipeforpeacenow.com. Prior shows, they're archived on that website. Yes. Thank you for listening. Thank you for all of your participation. Thank you for coming. And please do come again. Thanks. Bye-bye. Thank you.